If you've ever been to college or lived on your own in a big city, you've probably at some point rented an apartment with a questionable past. When we're young and poor, we'll put up with a lot to have a roof over our heads, colonies of roaches, non-working appliances, poor insulation. But what about demonic possession? We speak with a scientist in Michigan who had a college housing experience that reads less like a research paper and more like a horror movie. Today on Homespun Haints. Hello, hainted loves. Welcome to Homespun Haints. I'm Becky.
And I'm Diana.
And today on the show, we are delighted to bring you a guest who reached out to us, Bill Presley, who is currently working on his PhD at University of Michigan. He is a brilliant scientist. He's also an author. And as you can imagine, he's got some ghost stories for us.
We know that's the important part to you, hainted loves.
Exactly. So we're very thrilled that he's going to be coming on the show today. And if you are a patron, you have already had the opportunity to listen to an episode that we put out about distractible monsters. It's fondly entitled The Slimy Butt Bungler. What was it? The Slimy Butt Burglar and Other Distractible Monsters. So patrons, please be sure you go and take a listen to that. And speaking of Patreon, we have a new patron to give a shout out to. Another international patron. This is Deborah. She has just joined our Patreon and we are delighted beyond belief. Thank you from across the pond, Deborah.
Thank you, Deborah.
Hope you enjoy all of the bonus content coming your way. So, Diana, as you know,
yes,
I recently went and visited Florida and saw some ghosts, or felt some ghosts, went and hung out in some haunted places, and then I dragged my kids, kicking and screaming, to a nature preserve, because that's what good mothers do.
Yes, it is.
It was about 100 degrees outside and it was hot, but I really wanted my children to understand the importance of a very, very special plant. And I'm talking about the mangrove. Dun, 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 dun.
That was the most epic introduction for mangroves I've ever heard. Oh, I want to know more now.
Yes, and not to be confused with mangoes. Mangroves are different.
Or mandrakes. I kept thinking mandrakes when you told me you were going to talk about mangroves today.
Mandrakes.
Like mandrake. That's pretty spot on for our podcast most
really
of the time.
Is.
But mangroves threw me for a loop.
Well, I really didn't know how cool these things were. And I'm going to geek out a little bit. We have a scientist on the show, so I'm going to geek out a little bit here. I went and visited a mangrove preserve in the south of Florida, in Hollywood, Florida. It was between Fort Lauderdale and Miami, right on the coast. And I first visited a mangrove forest in Belize. And I just thought they were fascinating. Then they do a great job of keeping the shore intact. They're very hardy plants. They can live in anything. They help prevent tsunamis. They create this great ecosystem for ibises and crocodiles, I guess, in South America, alligators here in North America, and really cool fish and birds and crabs. My daughter sat on a crab. She was not too happy about that. It just made things
Wait, what?
Yeah, poor thing.
Oh, no. She sat on a crab.
She's like, I'm so tired. And she sat down on a bench, and then she's like, ah! She stood up. There's a little like land crab. Oh, they had a barracuda there. They had a bunch of skeletons. So I had to go home and look this up. I was like, all right, mangroves seem really cool, but I bet there's more to it.
And is there?
There is. Okay, as if these aren't cool enough, I'm sure everyone's like, oh my God, really? Becky, you're geeking out about a plant. Yes, I'm geeking out about a plant. Okay, let me tell you.
It's a big plant.
It's a tree. Yeah, it's a tree. These things are so incredible. And where they're growing, like it's dense. Nothing else is growing but the mangroves. At least no other vegetation. Check out what these things are good for. They're incredibly useful medicinally. for years and years and years and years and years, folk medicine wise, people have been using mangroves, the bark, the berries, the roots, the leaves, whatever they can extract. And it's traditionally used as a treatment for leprosy.
Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Now we know leprosy is like still a thing, in case you aren't aware. Leprosy is still a thing. We still don't have a cure. But people would use it to sort of treat the boils and other things that would occur on their skin, provide some relief.
I don't really know much about leprosy, but the other day, Amber and I were driving in the car, and we passed a homeless man walking down the street, and we both looked at each other afterwards, and we said, did that man have no nose? I think he had no nose. Is that's kind of what you're thinking of?
Yeah. I mean, that leprosy? Could happen from leprosy, but it's not very common in the U.S. I was terrified of this disease as a kid. I was always terrified that I would catch it. And my parents told me that the best way to catch leprosy is to be really malnourished and eat an armadillo. You can catch leprosy that way. Do not eat armadillo.
That is the most common roadkill, I think, in Oklahoma. Mm-hmm. So it's very possible.
Yeah, don't eat armadillo.
That's why this man had no nose.
It could be. Do you think? Maybe.
Could have ate an armadillo roadkill sandwich?
Yes.
Yikes.
They've recently done a lot of studies on mangroves because, hey, if it's good for folk medicine, there might be something to it. As we know, folklore often has some bases in truth.
Go figure.
Traditionally, mangroves were used to treat like diarrhea, diabetes, you name it.
Cool.
There was good reason. Okay, so not only are these plants incredibly hardy, but they can be used to treat funguses. They can treat staph infections. They're antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal, and they work against antibiotic-resistant bacteria. So isn't that cool? And they can also help you.
Yeah.
They can help with stomach ulcers. It's just incredible. Like, next time you're sick with anything, go eat a mangrove.
How do you eat a mangrove, Becky? It's an enormous tree.
Right. Well, you have to, I guess, shave a little off the root, but just don't do it in a place where it's protected. Take only photos, leave only footprints. However, there is a really, really cool mangrove forest. The Sundarbans, located in West Bengal, which is East India and Bangladesh. And here, the mangrove forest is so important to the people that live there that they have their own deity for the mangrove forest. Her name is Bon Bibi, and you must respect Bon Bibi. And by respecting her, you do not take more than you need. So if you've got leprosy, you just take a little bit of the bark. You don't cut down the whole tree. You go in the woods, you capture what you need to eat. You don't take more. You don't get greedy. Because if you do, Bon Bibi will let the tiger eat you. Because there's tigers there too. In fact, if you go on like a stock image search for Sundarbans, like half the photos are tigers. They're beautiful. I was fascinated by the idea of a deity. This is another cool thing about Bon Bibi. Doesn't matter what religion you are.
India and Bangladesh are such melting pots of so many different religions. And we're talking a rural area here too.
But there's still Christians, a small Christian population, a Muslim population here, Hindu population in this particular area. And they all respect Bon Bibi. Could even say worship. She's protecting them, protecting the forest, keeping the tigers at bay, making sure that mangrove still produces those anti-leprosy properties. I'll say one more thing about mangroves. When you're in a boat and you come upon the shore dotted, I shouldn't say dotted, it's infested is a bad word.
Snarled with.
It is just completely snarled with. Thank you. Yes, and snarled with mangroves. You will notice that the water changes color as you get close to the mangrove roots because it's not mud. It looks like mud. It's not mud. The mangrove roots actually stain the water tea colored. But I wouldn't drink it. Though maybe if you did, you would not have any more stomach ulcers. But there's probably a lot of bacteria in there, too, that he wouldn't want to consume.
Maybe. He might have dysentery, but no ulcers.
Well, that's good. Mangroves are good for diarrhea, too. So, you know.
I'll get mine from a sustainable source. So I don't want to make Bon BB mad.
Right. Exactly. You have to make sure that you do so respectfully.
Can you tell me, is Bon BB, is she a deity of all mangroves or just this one particular Bengali region?
My understanding is she is just in the Sundarbans, in this forest. Yeah. Yeah, she's obviously been around for a very, very, very long time.
Cool. So this is our new business venture. Yeah, we're going to grow a mangrove forest.
Oh, where? In Tulsa?
Literally anywhere. They grow all over the place.
Well, they grow in tropical regions. I don't think, as hot and disgusting as it gets where we live, I don't think either Tulsa or Atlanta is considered tropical. It's just considered miserable.
Yeah, only in the summer. They'd be very small little mangrove trees. They'd be like mangrove bonsai. That might be cute. A little bonsai mangrove garden in my bathtub.
Aw, that's cute. Okay, I think that should be a listener challenge. Who can come up with a mangrove bonsai? I'm sure we have some people listening to the show who are horticulturists or botanists. Could you let us know, is this possible? Can you grow a mangrove in your bathtub? Is that what you said?
In your bathtub. Except then it's going to be stained because of the tea.
Well, have a brown bathtub. Also, I would like to know from you all, what else do you know about mangroves or tropical plants in general or medicinal plants? This is something that we need to know about because...
Or tree deities.
Yeah, that too. That too. Anything. Please share with us. Come to our Facebook group, facebook.com/groups/homespunhaints. All you have to do is answer the questions and ask to be let in, and a moderator will let you in to the group. Or you can DM us or comment on things on our Instagram at homespunhaints, tweet to us at homespunhaints on our Twitter. We're also on TikTok at homespunhaints. There's so many ways to reach us. You can also even leave a comment on the show notes of this episode at homespunhaints.com. But please, please let us know, because we don't really know anything about plants other than Diana was vegetarian once and then she learned that plants scream when you eat them. And so now all she eats are fungi.
No, my pants aren't screaming. I've been working out.
That's awesome. So yes, please reach out to us on social and also let us know what you think of this episode. Anyway, before I ramble too much about other random botany facts, let's bring on Bill. Today on the show, we have Bill Presley, who we just learned, this is fascinating, he is a scientist. He is working on his PhD at UMich, University of Michigan. I should say that out. I'm also a graduate of a Big Ten school, so went to Northwestern. Very excited to have somebody on the show who actually has a very, very scientific background, and yet you still have ghost stories.
Yes.
Yeah, so tell everybody a little bit about what it is that you're studying and what you're working on, because I find it fascinating.
The short version of what I do is I'm a geneticist, and I, if this makes any sense to anybody, my job is to look at the molecular basis of pathogenesis in different Mendelian diseases. So basically what that means is when a family comes in with some sort of inherited disease that they're not sure what's causing it, my job is to look at data from their genome sequences and try to figure out what mutation that's running in the family is causing this disease and how it's causing this disease. And it usually has broader applications for understanding different molecular pathways once we figured this out.
That's nice. So you're not just working on sequencing any old genomes. You're working on sequencing specific genomes because you're going for a diagnosis.
Right. We're basically trying to understand legs of different pathways that are not well studied by taking families that have a disease where there's something wrong and figuring out what's going wrong, where it's going wrong, and then that leads us to what is this protein that this gene codes for doing? What is this leg of the pathway that we don't understand yet?
Oh, nice. It's so convoluted. so convoluted.
Oh, yeah.
Do you think there will ever be a time when we understand the whole human genome?
Not in my lifetime, probably. Anytime we think we know something, I mean, even when I was an undergrad, I had the same professor for a class freshman year and then senior year, and she would tell us, yeah, I know I told you that 4 years ago, but now we know that's not true.
I love that.
I believe it. Yeah.
That is science, period, folks.
Right. Well, at least she was staying up to date. So in addition to basically doing this life-changing work, you also have lived in a haunted apartment, and then you published a novella recently based off of sort of a fantasized, fictionalized version of some of those stories that you had, correct?
Yes. So ghost stories growing up have always been kind of a part of my life. I grew up around my father's mother, who's an old school Eastern European, very much into sort of ghosts and dream premonitions and clairvoyancy. So we always grew up, I don't know if I would say I grew up believing this stuff, but I definitely grew up hearing about it all the time. And so I think that that made me more open to it when I lived in this apartment. And I saw some things that really just, they stuck with me. And as a writer, well, as a pretend writer, I kind of drew on that when I was putting together this new novella that has been published by Little Demon Books. It's called Anyella. It's now available on Amazon, and it's kind of a mishmash of these experiences that I had in this apartment, gritty Michigan history, Eastern European folklore. So I had a great time writing it. It's been getting great reviews, and I'm really excited about it.
Awesome. That's excellent. And we're going to be sure to include links where people can purchase that on our show notes for this episode. And tell everybody what that's called again.
It's called Anyella. It's not at all spelled like it sounds. It's A-N-I-E-L-A. And it's actually the prelude to the Apprentice's Notebook series that I've been asked to write by Little Demon Books.
Ooh. That is excellent. Congratulations.
Yeah.
I'm not a pretend writer. That sounds like a pretty legit writer to me.
I was a pretend writer until this came out.
So if this genome sequencing thing doesn't work out, you can always fall back on creative writing.
I think it's the other way around. If the writing doesn't pay the bills, then I guess I'll stick with what I'm doing.
What gritty part of Michigan are you from?
I'm from Metro Detroit.
That's gritty enough.
I don't know if you have a lot of Midwesterners that listen to this podcast, but if you're from Michigan, especially Southeast Michigan, you probably know about Hamtramck, which is the Polish enclave where a lot of everybody I knew, that's where all of our grandparents and great-grandparents came from. So there's a lot of history about Hamtramck and a lot of Slavic mythology worked into this story.
Nice.
Your family's from Poland?
Yeah, my grandmother's family. My grandmother was born in Germany. Her parents were Polish war refugees. They were in a German labor camp during World War II. Growing up, I would hear these things. I'm like, wow, this is so terrifying. These demon babies and these owl vampires, they're called Strigas that you guys talk about. It's such a waste that nobody's actually worked this into some kind of plot. We would always hear, well, these stories are so gritty because they had to come up with things that were scarier than their actual lives. And all the stories I've heard about Poland and Eastern Europe don't paint it as a very, very nice place to live, especially during the 30s and 40s.
Oh, well, I really look forward to reading your stories. This is very exciting.
Thank you.
Speaking of ghosts and gritty ghost stories, on top of all of these things that you grew up with, you had your own experience.
Yes.
Well, I'll just give you the floor and let you start from the beginning.
This was just something that it sticks with you. I'll never forget this year of my life. The whole saga started in the fall of 2016. A close friend and I had just moved into this apartment off of Washtenaw Court in Ann Arbor. From the outside, it was very unassuming. It was your typical kind of poorly maintained, overpriced Ann Arbor slum that all the students are forced to live in because we're a captive audience.
Same in Chicago, yeah.
Right. Ironically, that's where my roommate lives now. So it was very unassuming from the outside. We didn't really get a very good tour of it when we were renting it. We kind of just had to rent sight unseen because that's how fast properties go in Ann Arbor. And so we move in, and this, it sounds so cliche to say, and honestly, the whole story starts as like a bad horror movie cliche, but it's true when I say that as soon as you walked into that apartment, you could just feel that something was wrong. And it made you anxious because you were so depressed and you didn't know why you were depressed. You just did not want to be in that apartment. You just felt like something didn't want you there. And in fact, that feeling would kind of manifest physically in this sort of dingy cloud that hung over the entire inside of the apartment. And I remember this specifically because my roommate would get so irritated with me and how high the electric bill was, because it didn't matter what room I was in, I would have every single light and lamp I could find on. I would have all the blinds open, and I would say, I'm just trying to get some light in here. I'm just trying to get some light. But you couldn't get light. It was like the apartment absorbed light. It was just always gray and sad inside. There was nothing you could do. Didn't matter. Again, it's cliche, but the activity really started right away with electronics. It was like everything in the apartment had a mind of its own. The lights would go on and off. The clocks would always be resetting themselves at different times. And at first we thought that was something mechanical, but what we noticed was the clocks would always be off from each other at different intervals, no matter how many times we reset them. It just didn't matter. But the incident that really was the first hint to me that something was actually going on here, it wasn't just in my head, it wasn't the typical terrible Ann Arbor wiring in the apartment, was this weird microwave incident. This microwave, it would turn itself on and off constantly, and it got to the point where it was so irritating that my roommate unplugged it. So I was sitting on the couch studying one day, and all of a sudden it just goes on and off, on and off, on and off three times. I thought, oh, maybe he plugged it back in. So I go to the kitchen to unplug it, and as I'm staring at the plug dangling down from the wall, so not plugged in, no power to the microwave, it goes on and off, on and off, on and off again three times.
Oh.
Me being a horror freak and Lorraine Warren seeing The Conjuring, like, oh my God, repeats of three, here we go. It was shortly after that the dream started.
Ooh.
This is the part that really sticks with me, and it's almost kind of hard to describe even today, because it's one of those things where you don't really know what it was you saw, you don't know how much stock you should put in it. Was it real? You don't want to think it was real, but I remember as this activity's picking up, and there's this tension building in the apartment. And we couldn't figure out where this tension was coming from. It's not between my roommate and I. We're still close friends. It's just, it felt like something didn't want us there. And this tension keeps building. And it leads to, shortly before I would say about Christmas, we started having these dreams. Well, me specifically. I would be laying in bed. It would be very late. And all of a sudden, my eyes would snap open. And I would be facing the closet. And it's worth mentioning at this point that this was a one-bedroom apartment. So my roommate and I shared the one bedroom. We had two twin beds on either side of the bedroom. The closet was in the middle, and then the door was directly across from my bed. Eyes are open. I'm staring at the closet. And there's just this black mist floating around in the closet that's slowly congealing first into this cigar shape and then into this figure, this human figure that's far larger than any person should be. I would say maybe 7 feet tall, broad shoulders. No features, just a black shadow that has no source. It walks out of the closet, crosses the room, and stares at me. Stands in the doorway, head kind of slightly tilted, just staring directly at me. I don't want to say that it was sleep paralysis, because it wasn't. I always knew that if I wanted to move, I could move. But something in me just said, don't move, because that will provoke this thing. Whatever it is, it wants you to just stay here still. It wants you to know it's here. It wants you to know it's watching you. But if you move, something bad's going to happen. It was just this awful feeling. And then all of a sudden, I would wake up. And I would think, was it a dream? Wasn't it a dream? And it kept happening. I would have this dream maybe two or three times a week, over and over again, leading up until Christmas. And it was so strange. I really didn't know what to make of it. And then especially when I went home for Christmas and all of a sudden the dream stopped. Did not have that dream in my parents' house, only in that apartment. And I remember specifically that year, my grandmother is the one that drove me back to that apartment after Christmas. And she, I think I mentioned at the beginning, she's very much into clairvoyancy, and she's what you might call sensitive. A lot of the women in her family are. And she just walks into that apartment and she gets this look on her face. I know this look. She wants to say something, but she doesn't know if she should say something. And I said, Grandma, what's wrong? And she said, did you renew your lease to this apartment? And I said, no, we didn't renew our lease. We really don't like it here. And she goes, I just want you to be careful. I'm glad you didn't renew your lease. I don't know what it is, but I just have such a horrible feeling here. There's something here that I just feel like it wants to hurt you.
Oh, no. Ooh.
So that was... Yeah, that's something to have rattling around in the back of your mind while you're having these dreams.
Right? How many more months on your lease at this point?
6. So this is in December.
Oh, no.
So actually, technically 8, because the lease would run until August, but I would move out in early June. After I move back, once again, the dreams start right away. And at this point, it's starting to affect my health. I'm tired all the time. I'm confused all the time. I'm randomly losing my balance. I feel weak. Every now and then, I would just lose sight in my right eye. I went to a doctor. What? They couldn't. Yeah. At one point, I ended up at the hospital because I woke up one day and I couldn't see it in my right eye. They couldn't. They never figured out what was wrong. All they told me was I was having MS-like symptoms.
Oh, my gosh. You must have been freaking out.
I was freaking out, and I wanted to attribute it to the lack of sleep that these dreams were causing, because I wasn't sure, were they dreams? Was I awake? I never really knew. I just knew I was not getting a good night's sleep. But what really scared me is that come about, I would say late April, when I passed my finals, I moved out of that apartment back to my parents' house, and I would go back and forth every now and then, but for the most part, I pretty much stayed at my parents' house. I didn't have those dreams at all at my parents' house. My sleep schedule immediately returned to normal, but the symptoms didn't stop. And I don't know how to describe the feeling. It was, if you've ever read Harry Potter, it was almost like you're walking around with a Horcrux around your neck. You're just always depressed. You feel weak. It's almost like something's feeding off of you. And you just can't explain it. This sounds so ridiculous to say. Again, it sounds cliche to say, but the day that that lease ended, the symptoms stopped. As soon as I was not tethered to that apartment, everything stopped. I woke up that day. It felt fine. I never had another health problem.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Wait. The day the lease ended or the day you moved out?
The day the lease ended, not the day I moved out. So the day I moved out, I stopped having the dreams, but the symptoms themselves did not stop until the day the lease ended.
Oh, wow. Whoa.
And I didn't find out sort of the freakiest parts of what was going on there until I moved out, because my roommate is an ardent non-believer in anything supernatural. And I knew if I told him about these dreams, I would get made fun of. And I would make comments like, you know, I think this place is haunted. You know, you see the shadow out of the corner of your eye, the microwave is going on and off. And he always had an explanation for everything.
Even the microwave?
He would say something, well, it was just there's power stored inside or something. Yeah. He had some kind of logical explanation for something. He would say, well, maybe don't read your Ed and Lorraine Warren books before you go to bed. And so I never mentioned this to him at all. So about a year after I moved out of that place, and I'm just trying not to think about it at that point because I don't really know. The fact that the symptoms stopped the very day that the lease ended, I almost thought maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe this is something psychological, and now that I'm no longer associated with this apartment, my brain has switched back to normal. I don't know. So he calls me on the phone, and he's pale. I mean, he's always pale, but he's paler than usual. And he just looks frantic. And before I even say anything, he goes, did you ever have any weird dreams in that apartment? So I'm like, well, what do you mean weird dreams? What all of a sudden is prompting you to ask that? And he said, well, remember when my sister used to stay over sometimes and she would spend the night on the air mattress between our beds in that bedroom? She said she's glad that we don't live there anymore because she thought it was haunted, because she always had this dream that this black figure would come out of the closet and stand in the doorway and stare at you. And it always freaked her out because she didn't want to move when she saw it. She felt like she couldn't move. And he goes, and it freaked me out because I used to have the same dream all the time, and no. I thought it was just a nightmare.
Oh, no.
I go, hold on. I add another friend to the FaceTime because he, after I moved out, used to spend the night there sometimes. When he did, he used to sleep in my bed. And I said, when you slept in my bed, did you ever have any weird dreams? He goes, I didn't want to tell you because I know you believe in this stuff and I didn't want to freak you out. But I used to have this dream where I'd wake up and there was this black figure standing over me. And I can't explain the feeling. I don't know how I knew, but it just felt like he was angry that I was there instead of you.
Oh.
Oh, shit. So, wait a minute. When the friend who slept on the air mattress in between the beds, mm-hmm. the sister of your roommate, she said that she had the same dream as you had, except she saw the figure going over to look at you, not at her.
Right.
Oh, right.
Looking
wow.
at me, just like my roommate saw the figure looking at me. I don't know why it was attached to me. I don't know what it wanted to do. Even now, I get goosebumps when I talk about it because it was... I try not to think about it very much because I swear to God, sometimes when I get worked up about the story, when I give it recognition, I swear I see a little black shadow in the corner of my eye. It's always this thing that's hanging over my head. Like, was it really attached to me? Is it coming back? I don't know. What was it? I don't want to say it changed my views on the supernatural, but it confirmed a lot of the things that I thought I believed growing up hearing. I think the only sweet stories to come out of this that I always cherish is he... In that apartment, I always wondered if there was something protecting me, because the figure would always stand in the doorway, like it couldn't get close to me, like there was something standing between it and me that wouldn't let it come any further, that it could only do what it did from a distance. And my roommate told me, I woke up one night, and I had that same dream that the figure was staring at you, and there was an old woman sitting on your bed, at the very end of your bed. And he describes, I swear to God, he describes my great-grandmother perfectly. The glasses, the haircut, the height, and she's a very small woman.
Oh, wow.
And he goes, she said something to me, but I don't know, because whatever language she said it in, I didn't understand. Oh. And I said it must have been Polish.
Polish.
Whoa.
Wow.
So the great-grandmother, was she the mom of the grandmother that...
Yes. And she was also supposedly sensitive.
Do you think she's still with you, protecting you?
I like to think so. I keep her picture up in my apartment just as a little nod to that. There's actually a medallion that I keep. And I wonder if this is what sets this whole sort of protection thing in motion. I remember when I was very young, my grandmother was babysitting, and I had a bad dream. And I went to a Catholic school. I don't remember why we had them, but they had given us these little angel medallions one day. And I still had it sitting on my bureau, and it was shortly after my great-grandmother, my grandmother's mother, had died. I had a bad dream, and I was freaked out. My grandmother came into my room, and she saw the little angel medallion. And she said, look, this is my mother. She's watching you now. Nothing's going to hurt you now. And I remember when these dreams started, I actually took that medallion out of my parents' house back to that apartment and put it under my pillow. And it was shortly after that my roommate described that dream.
Oh, wow.
Oh.
I would have done. That's amazing. So you didn't see your great-grandmother, only your roommate?
Not at that time, but... When I was younger, I used to wake up and swear that I felt someone sitting on the edge of my bed, and that the mattress would actually be like there was a depression there, like somebody was there. And I could feel someone kind of pat me on the leg.
Oh, that is very sweet. I like that.
It is. You described all of these visions of the shadow figure coming out of the closet and coming into the room and staring at you from the doorway as a dream, but not sleep paralysis. And then you would wake up. How do you know you define it as a dream and not as something you were actually looking at?
I don't know. To this day, I don't know what I saw. If it was a dream, if it was something that I was seeing that I just blacked out after a while because it was feeding off my energy or something, I really don't know. I've spent a lot of time trying to figure out what that was and if anything happened in that apartment. I've never come up with anything. I don't know what would have brought that into that apartment.
Well, student housing with so much turnover, you never know.
To give a cliche answer, I mean, maybe somebody played with a Ouija board before us. I don't know, but there have been a lot of people living in that apartment since the 70s, so who knows?
Your grandmother did come with you that one time. Did you ever ask her if she had any clarification? Did you talk to her about this?
Yes. About a year after I moved out, I was at the table with her and my aunt, and I made some comment like, you know, I'm glad I moved out of that place. I really think it was haunted. There was just some weird stuff that was going on there. And my grandmother got really quiet, and I said, well, you felt it too. What do you think it was? And she goes, I don't know, but it was evil. It was evil, whatever it was.
You talked about the sequence of the threes and all that and the protection. It does sound demonic.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's kind of where you were going with that too.
That's what I think, but it's almost like you don't want to say it. Nobody wants to say I was assaulted by a demon for a year, but that's...
Right.
I think that's probably what happened, and I just... It gives you goosebumps to even say that you had an encounter with something demonic. You faced pure evil.
Yes and no, though. You had a buffer.
I did have a buffer. Yeah. And I wonder what would have happened if I didn't have that buffer. And I also wonder why it was so attached to just me specifically. What I ever did to make it an easy target. Or what I ever did to make me an easy target.
A lot of people find that when they're going through something really psychologically rough, that they become more vulnerable to things like that. Was it a time in your life?
Well, not to get too personal, but that was not a great time in my life. There were a lot of things changing around me. I was questioning sort of my future path, and it did lead to some just basic depression. Which is why at first I thought, whatever's going on in that apartment's probably psychological. But having three other people confirm that I'm not crazy, that whatever I saw, they saw too. The confirmation, at least, is valuable to me. At least I know that I'm not crazy.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Also, I'm curious if your roommate or her sister or your friend or anybody else is Catholic. You also said that you really liked reading the books of Ed and Lorraine put together and their files and all that. If having that sort of openness or even having a faith that believes in the demonic would have made you a little bit more vulnerable. I don't know if you thought about that aspect.
That makes sense, because my roommate and I were both fallen Catholics. We had both been raised Catholics, and neither of us at that point believed in God. I'm still pretty much an atheist, but unlike him, I do believe that there is something out there, some kind of spiritual plane, some kind of spiritual world, and like humans, I'm sure whatever's there, some are good, some are evil. So maybe that belief is what made me the target instead of him, because like I said, he did not believe any of that at all. He didn't tell me about what he was seeing because he didn't want to freak me out because he knew that I did believe in that. And we talked about it. He never really wanted to talk. For a long time, he never really wanted to talk about that apartment after that phone call. He would kind of shut that conversation down. So whatever he saw disturbed him. It wasn't until about 3 years later over drinks that he finally kind of opened up and said, you know, I've done a lot of research trying to understand what was going on in that apartment. And I still don't really know what I believe in. But you read these stories about people with, like, sleep paralysis demons. And it's almost equivalent to what I saw. And other people have seen it. I don't know what it was, but other people have seen things like this.
Yes, but like you said, it wasn't sleep paralysis. And you all saw the exact same thing.
Right.
You can't describe somebody's great-grandma perfectly from sleep paralysis demons.
When you've never seen a picture of her, no.
Right, exactly. Or would know that she would speak in Polish.
Or would know that she was under your pillow at the moment.
You right.
Know, he didn't know all that.
No.
Was your roommate studying the same subject as you?
Sort of. He's also a scientist. He's a pharmaceutical chemist.
Okay. Yeah, it is fascinating. Well, maybe you're going to change the world one day. In a very, very positive way, meaningful way. And this evil entity was trying to stop it. So you can go on and do your amazing work.
Well, whatever it was, I guess in some way it was worth it because what I saw was kind of the inspiration for what became the first scene that I wrote of my new novella.
Wow. And so as a creative, not as a scientist, I know scientists don't do conjecture, but as a creative in your wildest dreams, exactly who was this and what did they want from you?
As a creative, I think it was a demon. And not to turn this into a Conjuring movie, but I think that I was probably in the early stages of oppression. I think that it wanted to feed off me.
Hit us with the Catholic knowledge. What's the difference between oppression and possession?
Oppression is a stage leading to possession, as far as I understand it. The demon has begun to feed off your energy, and it often comes with physical symptoms very similar to what I experienced, and mental symptoms very similar to what I experienced. It's this deep feeling of depression, like you're not yourself anymore, like something's feeding off of you. Reading about that and then comparing it to my experience, I look at it and go, it's textbook.
We said at one point, depression can cause you to be vulnerable to demonic influences. On the other side, demonic influences can cause you to be depressed. Do you think there's a difference there, or is it just always hand in hand?
I think like attracts like. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're already in a state of sort of depression, of vulnerability, that's going to attract something that wants to feed off of those feelings, and that exacerbates them.
I am so glad that you got out of that and did not renew your lease and found a place that was better. And I'm sure if you had a chance to talk to previous or later tenants, you would have. Did you ever speak to anybody who lived there after you or before?
I was very tempted. I would pass that apartment complex often on the way to class. Think, you know, I should just knock on the door. I should just ask, have you seen anything here? And I never had the guts to do it because I don't want to be the crazy guy that's just showing up at your apartment like, have you seen any demons? But
especially if they have. Oh, my goodness.
Right. I'll show up with a little mannequin and go, where did the demon touch you?
Right. Terrifying. Oh, a lot of the theme of this story has been that people didn't want to tell you they were seeing this because they didn't want to freak you out. Do you think if the paranormal and ghosts and demons wasn't so taboo, do you think everybody would be telling stories like this?
I think everybody's had at least one experience that's just, how else do you explain that? I know everybody likes to look for logical explanations for things, but in a way it's kind of, I don't know, gets me excited that there are still so many things outside of what we understand. There's still another realm left to explore. It gets the creative in me excited.
Yeah. So we'll probably never really finish sequencing the genome, but do you think we'll ever really understand the paranormal?
I actually think you have a better chance of sequencing the genome because at least people are funding that.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
At least we have the full human genome sequence now. I don't think we're even anywhere close in the field of paranormal research.
Right. Well, we don't exactly have the same level of empirical evidence in paranormal.
That's true.
There's a few fuzzy photographs. Why are the photos always fuzzy?
I keep going through photos I took in that apartment, like zooming in on random places to see if I ever see anything. I never do, but it would be so cool if I could dig something up.
So have you had any experiences since? Or have you been able to say that you're free and clear?
Every now and then. And this is why I don't talk about this often, but I wanted to come on and talk about it because I think more people should talk about these things because I'm a rational person. I'm a scientist. I'm a perfectly sane, functioning, contributing to society person. And I have had this experience. And I think that if more people talk about these things, and that the people who are going through this won't feel isolated the way that I felt when this was happening. Like, I didn't feel like I could tell anybody what I was seeing because I would end up in a psych ward. I don't like to talk about it often because when I give it that recognition, when I think about it, when I get fixated on it, when I try to figure out what was going on, I don't know if it's psychological, I don't know what, but I swear I feel it. And it's standing near me. I'll see the shadow out of the corner of my eye. And I remember when I moved into the apartment after that I moved into, the very first day I was there unpacking the things that had been in the previous apartment, all of a sudden the lights flickered and I felt a little breeze and I swear I saw something walk past me. But that was the last time in that apartment that I ever saw anything.
Was it a particular item that you feel like connected the two places?
I don't think so, because there was nothing in that apartment that was in that apartment when we got there that we took. Everything was new purchase. So I don't know if it was connected to any one thing. I almost feel like it's just that act of recognizing what happened, that it's still kind of hanging around every now and then. And if you feed it, it will show itself.
Well, keep that medallion
close.
You have protection, and always remember that. When the light is stronger than the darkness,
yes.
Don't give in to it. I'm sure your great-grandmother is still by your side.
I feel her every now and then, too. It's a lot more pleasant than the other.
You mentioned that the women on your dad's side are sensitive. It doesn't necessarily just have to be women. Do you feel like you've inherited some of that as well? And that's made you aware of these things?
I don't know if I've inherited the sensitivity or not. According to my grandmother, and this is all family legend, and I don't know how much of this I really believe, but her grandmother was a Roma gypsy. And they were very mystic people, and all the women from that line, because of her grandmother, were sensitive. And it was only the women. That's just the family legend. I don't know. I think perhaps for me, just being raised with the awareness of that. And it was really hard to refute her as a kid. It's really hard to get away with things when your grandmother, if you even think about doing anything bad, you get a phone call because your grandmother had a dream about it.
Ah, I I love it.
And it sounds like a joke. It sounds like, I swear to God, I remember I was with an ex and we were planning to go on a vacation to Tennessee. And my grandmother did not like this ex. She did not want me alone with this ex. She didn't want me to go on vacation with this ex. And I didn't tell anybody. The plane tickets were booked and stuff, but nobody knew. It was kind of a hush-hush thing. I was 18 at the time. And I get a phone call one morning. She goes, "You're taking her to Tennessee." And she named the hotel. She said, "I had a dream about it. You're going to this hotel. You're going on this day. My mother told me."
Uh-uh.
Oh. So great-grandma's watching you a little too close, huh, sometimes?
I mean, you want to make fun of my grandmother. When we were kids, my father and all of us, you know, we would want to make fun of my grandmother for saying these things. But then stuff like that would happen. And it's like, how do you refute that? I remember we were all sitting around the kitchen table one day at a family dinner. And my father and his sisters were making fun of their mother for all of her ghost stories. And she said, "You stop that right now. My mother's watching you. She's not happy about this." And all of a sudden, the lights go on and off, and a cup flies across the room. Everybody was quiet. Nobody said another word after that.
Bet they didn't. Nice.
I love how spunky they are. You have been an absolutely delightful guest. This has been wonderful talking to you. You're a fabulous storyteller, and I absolutely love that you're a researcher, you're a scientist, and yet you've had these experiences. It's like an extra level of validation.
And that's really something I wanted to stress. I am a normal person. I do normal things other than the horror writing. It can happen to normal people, too.
Absolutely. Not just the people who go looking for it.
Right.
Thank you, Bill. That was phenomenal. I loved it.
Thank you.
And tell everybody the name of your novella one more time in the anthology.
And my novella is called Aniela. It's the prelude to the Apprentice's Notebook series, and it is now available through Amazon, paperback, and Kindle. It was put out by Little Demon Books. And the story I've told today about living in this apartment is going to be told in a sort of abbreviated version in an anthology of true paranormal experiences by Timber Ghost Press. So they're a newer indie publisher, but they've been putting out some pretty cool stuff.
Awesome. Excellent. And we'll make sure that all of those links are going to be included on our show notes, which you can find at homespunhaints.com. Also, while we're at it, be sure you follow us on our social, on Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, Facebook, and Pinterest. You can find all of those at Homespun Haints. And Bill, do you have any social media that you'd like people to follow you on if they're interested in learning more about you and your books?
I am on Goodreads. I really need to get on the other stuff. Apparently that's something that authors should have. I'm just a Luddite, I guess. If you're interested in knowing more about my book specifically, you can follow my publisher, Little Demon Books, on Twitter. And they will be posting updates about my series as it comes out.
Perfect. Well, we'll make sure we include a link to that as well. And again, thank you. Sweet dreams, everybody. Hope you don't see any shadow figures in your closet.
Right? You'll be having a pretty spooky day.
Homespun Haints is hosted by Becky Kielimnik and Diana Doty and produced by Homespun Haints Media LLC. Editing and music by Becky Kielimnik. Show notes by Diana Doty. If you have a ghost story and you'd like to be considered as a guest for this podcast, please visit our website at homespunhaints.com/submit.